Axis Mundi.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Straight White American Jesus. My name is Brad Onishi, Associate Professor of Religious Studies at Skidmore College. Our show is hosted in partnership with the CAP Center at the University of California, Santa Barbara. I am joined for the second time by Dr. Richard Steigman-Gall, who is Associate Professor of History at Kent State. Dr. Steigman-Gall is an expert in many things. His academic interests concern the cultural and religious dimensions of German National Socialism, specifically the cohort of Nazis who believed in, quote, positive Christianity, and the struggles they waged with Nazism's neo-pagans for religious dominance in the Third Reich. His articles have appeared in the journals German History, Kirchliche Zeitgeschichte, I'm practicing my German here for the first time in probably a year, Social History, Central European History, Totalitarian Movements and Political Religions, the Journal of Contemporary History. His book, which I've recommended in the past and will recommend again, The Holy Reich, Nazi Conceptions of Christianity, 1919 to 1945, came out in 2003 with Cambridge University Press and has been translated into several languages. So once again, Richard, thanks for joining me and thanks for being here.
Brad, thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Well, I wanted to have you on. Just, you are an expert in sort of Nazi Germany and that historical period and that that historical place. And I wanted to just start today by asking you if you could help us understand, and at a very basic level, the fact that in 1923, Hitler and his cohorts really made a first push for power in Germany. And I for all of you listening, you might be thinking, well, why are we talking about this? And the reason I want to talk about it is because, as Richard, I think, will explain here in a second, that was a failed coup in many ways. And yet the fallout from it was immensely important. It really set up what led later to Hitler's rise to power. And so I think you all can see the kind of historical comparisons I'm trying to provide here with what's happening in our own country. So with that, I'll just say, Richard, what happens in 1923? Give us the very basic, I'm a freshman in college, I know nothing. What do I need to know about 1923?
I was going to say the napkin version, but if you like the freshman version, Brad, we can do that too. So Hitler is in Munich, which is a hotbed of far-right agitation at the start of the Weimar Republic. And this is the fall of the empire, the fall of the Kaiserreich, as it's called. Kaiser Wilhelm flees. He abdicates, and in the chaos at the end of World War I, a republic is declared. And for a lot of Germans, the very birth then of a republic is associated with the humiliation of defeat, right, at the end of World War I. So that's a very inauspicious birth of a new political reality. So Munich, not the capital of Germany, Berlin, but rather the capital of Bavaria, Munich, becomes a hotbed of far-right agitation. And the Nazi Party, in fact, is not the only Naziistic party in Munich. There are other rival Nazi-ish or fascist parties that are in Munich, such that the Nazi Party, the NSDAP, is simply one of those. So Hitler becomes a gravitational force in the Munich far-right political sort of ecosystem. Some scholars think it's his personal charisma that welds these different parties together. And 1923 is also a very turbulent year in Germany because of the inflation that had racked Germany's economy, wrecked the currency. Now that culminates in the French just marching into one part of Germany to start extracting wealth from the country because Germany had been behind on its reparations payments to France at the end of World War I. The Treaty of Versailles demanded that Germany pay back for the damage they had done to France in the war. And the French just march in and start extracting resources when the Germans failed to deliver them. Now that happens to actually take place somewhere else entirely in Germany, not anywhere near Bavaria. But because Bavaria is such a hotbed, a pre-existing hotbed, it's in this kind of environment that in November of 1923, the Nazis led by Hitler decide, okay, let's use this moment to strike. So this is a putsch that famously begins in a beer hall, the Bürgerbräukeller in a part of Munich, which then got destroyed in World War II. So it's not like a place you can visit now. And one of the more interesting questions when you ask about comparative analysis with what happened on January 6th in Congress is the role of pre-existing political establishment, right? And either looking the other way or winking their eye or perhaps resisting what Hitler was up to. So it was a government, the existing government of Bavaria in 1923 was a right-wing establishment government. It wasn't far right. It was right. It was, you know, plainly conservative. But to be conservative in Bavaria in 1923 was to be, among other things, already desirous of monarchy, right? So a centuries-long history of monarchy was also present in Bavaria. And so 5 years after the end of that monarchy, as you might expect, a lot of mainstream, I'll call them mainstream conservatives, have a lot of fondness for monarchy and are monarchist in their sentiments. So you've got a political establishment which is monarchist and right wing, and then a new radical movement which does not seek the return of monarchy, right? That's an interesting question in itself, Brad. Hitler allows for enough ambiguity for certain old elites in the German monarchy, the German nobility, to suppose that they might be welcomed by the Nazi movement. But Hitler never actually comes out and says, yes, I will restore monarchy, because, of course, that's never an interest of his.
Thanks for listening to this free preview of our Swag episode. In order to get access to the full episode and so much more, become a Straight White American Jesus premium subscriber by clicking the link in the show notes. It'll take you like 2 clicks, I promise. In addition to getting access to this episode, you'll have access to the entire Swag archive, over 550 episodes. You'll also get an extra episode every month, ad-free listening, Discord access, and so much more. All that for less than $6 a month, and it helps us keep our flag up and continue to safeguard democracy from religious nationalism, extremism, and rising authoritarianism. Check it out. It's not hard, I promise.